It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, Brad, I guess the rumors of your death were kind of larger than life.
See, no, I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back.
I know.
This one's a for real. I'm back.
This is really here and not just on.
I'm not sure that I left, but all right.
Yeah, not sure. Yeah, but I don't know if you left either. But we had that nice little talk about going some different directions, whatever. And people kind of, you know,
they took it further down the road than we had discussed. I kind of read all the. I went, really? Is that how that came across?
Yeah, I was looking back at that too, going, okay, yeah. Somehow we oversaid what we were trying to say.
I'm still your buddy. I'm here.
I'm still your buddy, and I'm here.
So, I'm podcasting with you. So
we've got a few miles under us though since the last time we were here.
Yes. You've gone to the far country and back.
I went to New Zealand. I went to the land of Middle Earth.
Man. Yes, you did.
Every place you went
to the Shire.
Every place you go on the South Island, all you see is Middle Earth. And then when you're up on the North Island, it's every vacant hill looks like the Shire. It does. You just drive through and go, oh my gosh, it could be filmed there. It could be filmed there. I mean, I know where it's filmed because it's a big deal, but just everywhere you look, it's the same kind of look, and it just feels like you're hanging around the Shire. Yeah.
That's cool.
Bunch of little hobbits.
Here you go, buddy.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Did you get a chance to hear some of the Jack stuff?
I did. That guy, it's wonderful spirit, just him being hungry for what God's really doing.
Yeah.
And kind of having to resist the encroachment of people always trying to define that or control it or what we do to it.
Yeah, and the one you haven't heard yet, he said at the end, man can't seem to resist the urge to put in a box anything the Holy Spirit begins to do.
Ooh.
And that's a
dang.
That is A, true, B, depressing.
Why?
And that's true of 2,000 years. Every time God starts to do something, somebody's got to build a box around it.
Goofy question. Why do we do that? Because I absolutely recognize, but I think where I'm at today, I'm going like, why do we do that? Because I don't have a desire to. I don't know if I used to have a desire to, but I do see that people do end up trying to control it. Is it? I know it's the operative word.
Was it the C word? Yeah, I think control is big. I think a couple things. One, you don't want people messing up, so you make rules to protect everybody from doing the dumb things you did, which keeps people from learning to listen to Jesus.
I did
lots of dumb things learning to listen to the Spirit. And I think part of it's that, and I think part of it, I'm cynical enough to say, I think part of it is somebody needs to make a living out of it. And if you're going to make a living out of it, whether book sales or salary from a group of people.
That's not a box. That's a cash register.
And the group I know from around the world that have not done that, that were kind of tempted to make a church out of it and pay salaries and then didn't end up doing that, that has stayed alive far longer, far more real than those that, you know, we had to have a leader and we had to pay a leader. And then the leader got to be the one thing and he could hear it from God better than anyone else. And
see, but that's not just a church thing. That's a life thing.
No, it is. I agree with you.
And I mean, in a lot of the business domains that I'm in, I'm a weird bird because I'm not there trying to make a buck. That's not driving. I'm there because I'm excited about a particular project. And they always go weird because somebody's trying to get their paycheck. Somebody's trying to make a buck out of this. And I'm going like, dang, that's what warps everything.
Yeah, it does. And the fact that book publishers don't even know how to promote a book without promoting an author, without having a celebrity to somehow put up on a pedestal. And oh, gosh. And I see that among even young guys that are on a similar journey to us that are trying to campaign for market share and trying to be the celebrity.
Market share of what?
Of selling books. And trying to get, you know, the whole manipulation of Amazon to try and get my book to be number one for 10 minutes on a Friday after I release it.
Write a great book.
It's so depressing to see all that. But love my time in New Zealand. Love my time with Jack. And then I've got a couple of interviews with John Beaumont that I'm also going to be putting up a little bit later on. And he's another brother I met with there.
Another wise old soul.
Yeah, this one's been more kind of on the ministry track of traveling the world, talking about, you know, this journey, similar to what I do more than – and Jack's been a, you know, a tent maker. He's been a surgeon all his life. And
so why do they end up in New Zealand?
Well, John was born there, so John, okay, that's his own country.
And that's a good reason.
Jack went there in 65. He had the opportunity to go down and be at a hospital there and took the opportunity to go after he got kicked out of the Congo. Story he told about his depression, that was pretty powerful stuff, I thought.
Well, yeah, it was wild that he's such a dear friend and, you know, he's talking a lot about surgery stuff and you're going, I don't know this part of your life. That's not – you've known him as the God Seeker.
Yeah. Yeah, I met him 7 years ago first, and by reputation before with friends of mine who know him, and so sitting down with him, yeah, I got to go back and figure out that all part of his life. I saw both those guys energized in a new way, just being part of that conversation. You know, being able to draw from their life experience because both of them are retired, live in pretty small worlds, and health wise don't get out a lot to do things, but. I think for Jack, it's opened up a whole door to other people in Auckland because he came to a meeting I did on Sunday afternoon and one added a lot of – I wish I'd recorded some of his comments there because I didn't have a recorder going. But we were having a discussion on relational church and Jack came and I was surprised he came. Every time I've hugged that man three times where I'm saying goodbye and I'll probably never see you again and then it doesn't happen. So we're going to go, maybe we'll get another shot.
Well, see, I'm back, see?
Yeah, well, there you go. So, but he's already invited some of those folks over to his place, and now some brothers and sisters around Auckland that I know are getting some conversation with a pretty
cool.
neat brother. Yeah. And I even thought about how somebody 89, 90 years old, most of the time we think, well, their life's done. They don't have much to offer. I wonder how much treasure is sitting around old folks' homes.
Dude, that seems to be when you're biblically called.
Yeah.
You finally grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just a pup.
Yeah. Such a bent for the new, the young, that's what controls a lot of the media stuff. And yet the depth is oftentimes in people that we kind of pass by every day and maybe don't even think to go sit down with and talk with.
Yeah,
and
get yeah, yeah. It is bizarre. There's a whole bunch of, in media settings, I tend to be a gray hair. And you're just like, I'm just getting started. Wait a minute.
You can hang out with older people.
I'm a pup. It's like, and then you look, it's like, so there is, there's that whole skewing, but gosh, perspective and growing up and having a chance. I mean, I just sort of feel like, wow, I'm excited about some of the stuff that I'm engaged in, largely because I feel like, gosh, I finally logged enough life to learn a few things. Now I get to apply them. In a fresh, different setting that's a blast.
Hmm.
And you're just going like, there's a lot to be said about growing up.
There is.
There is. I mean, I think it's a valuable thing.
I think it's cute that you think you're growing up in your mid-40s.
I know.
Yeah, because I'm 59. I'm still trying to grow up.
Yeah. No, I'm just looking to hit my stride. I just sort of feel like, okay, I think I'm an adult now, maybe.
Well, maybe you go.
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know.
What I loved about this trip to New England, other than the Middle Earth kind of refreshment, but was the personal conversations I had. It wasn't even the meeting stuff I did. This trip was really about one-on-one conversations or one-on-two of people going through really tough stuff, people dealing with pain in their life that hadn't surfaced in sometimes 30, 35 years.
Wow.
And watching it surface and watch God touch people and... The conversations were just extraordinary, and one I had a couple of – it was fun down in Fairleigh when I was on the South Island first. A bunch of college students who had to be like 13, 14-year-old kids when I was there. They all wanted to come back and talk to me, so a bunch of them came back from their colleges, drove quite a distance to get back to Fairleigh.
Really?
For the weekend, yeah, and two of those drove me back up to Christchurch to get on my flight to go up to the North Island. And one of them said – it was so cute. This gal, 21-year-old gal, medical student – she leans up in the car. We've been having talks all weekend and then now a couple hours in the car, and we're getting close to the airport. And she leans up and she says, you know what I'm beginning to think, Wayne? And I said, what's that? She said, I'm beginning to think that the reason all of this seems so difficult is because it's far simpler than I'll dare to believe.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, if that's
the truth right there.
Boy, it is. Because I do think we complicate it, and people have got trying to figure out all these little things to do, and it really is more simple than that.
I think all of that those are fear impulses inside us. Because when you do finally realize, wait a minute, this isn't that hard. The only reason you can kind of sit there and revel and go like, oh, this is more simple, is because you don't feel it's all up to you.
Yeah.
If you don't know that emotionally,
yeah.
it's not simple at all.
For sure.
There's all this stuff I can't control.
Yeah.
And
baby, look what we got.
Oh, my goodness. You're enticing me back, aren't you?
Should we talk about it?
Yes. We have hot, fresh cookies.
Sarah just walked in here with some of those.
They're still melting.
I was going to miss these. All right. Brad came over to record. I said, darn, you got to bring us up some warm cookies.
I'm sorry. Didn't we already do this podcast?
We did this one. But I told Sarah, I don't want to wait till the podcast's over because it'll be cool by then. And warm cookies are just the best way to eat them. So,
wow.
So now we got some warm chocolate chip cookies. Sorry, we can't.
This is what you do all day. You sit around, your wife brings you warm cookies?
No, I'll tell you what, dude. I'm at the lowest weight I've been in 30 years. I had doctor's appointment.
You're at your fighting weight.
Well, not yet.
Okay.
I'm on my way down. So I've not had these in a long time. So, yeah.
What a treat that I get to share your favorite with you.
Yeah, there we go. We had a little communion here. If we had a little, you got a little coffee.
It's just like communion. Coffee in it.
I've got a little water, so we could just break bread together, brother, over some cookies.
I bet there's people that don't know and understand cookies and Sarah and the Jacobsons.
Oh, I think if not, you go back and look at the chocolate chip cookie podcast if you want to. But yeah, Sarah makes these extraordinary cookies. In fact, she's making them for this weekend. My whole life is going to converge this weekend.
Really?
I'm doing a seminar up in
the Central. A cookie seminar. This is a cookie seminar?
She's bringing cookies because I'm doing a seminar in the Central California this weekend of people that I used to pastor.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I bet that's going to be interesting for you.
Way back to the first job I had and even some from the second task I had. And,
see if any of it's
and
stuck.
They're all on very different journeys. And I was just thinking, you were talking about the whole expert thing and, needing to – this is more complicated than it appears, and I've got to find somebody. These are a lot of people used to just sit on every word I used to say, and so now it's like, wow. Ooh. I basically want to tell you, stop listening to me and listen to him because – that's a transformation people have to somehow get past. I don't need an expert. I don't need a book to tell me how to do this. I've got the Holy Spirit. How do I rely on him so this process can unfold in my life?
But that only happens.
Pardon me while I chew.
Yeah. See, that only happens when you taste and see and you forge your own direct relationship. I mean, there's got to be an analogy. There's a cookie right here.
We already did that analogy. Yeah,
I know, but I do.
Hearing about it is one thing. Coming over someday to Sarah and my house and letting her make some of these cookies for
That's
you.
A different experience. That's a different experience.
Incredibly different.
My kids are going to be like, Dad, didn't you bring some home? It's like, no, I didn't. There wasn't enough.
Did you see the best blog post ever at the God Journey a couple weeks ago?
No.
To
the best ever?
Yeah.
Who voted that?
I did.
You did.
It's totally self-motivated.
Okay.
I loved it. This was the comment. And it's actually a mother quoting her 15-year-old son who just said this to her.
Okay.
Religion is a social experiment to see how many hoops someone will jump through before they go postal.
I love that. Well, nothing like a 15-year-old to kind of cut through it all.
Man, the wisdom of youth. I think that's incredible.
Going postal.
How many hoops someone will jump through before they go postal?
Context. What's he mean by postal?
Oh, well, yeah, for people not from the U.S.
Yeah.
We have postal workers who sent, I guess because working at the post office is such a horrible thing. Of course, it's been a few years since somebody's
done that. Someone shot everyone else. That's what you mean.
Yeah, but postal workers tend to show up with guns and blow people up. And so going postal in America means you've just had enough. Oops, cookie down the wrong pipe.
That's a different experience.
Postal in America means you just had enough and had to go shoot people.
Oh, man.
So it's kind of ugly.
But I do. I think when you're, I mean, you could hear that in what Jack had talked about. When you're hungry for something that's real and all the people around you are trying to sort of confine you in the imprisonment of their misunderstanding, that is really frustrating.
Oh, it is. Keep talking. I'm eating a cookie. I'm fully into this cookie right now.
You could have seen the look on Wayne's face. That's an inappropriate face. It's like you're having an experience. I think the challenge is when you're there relationally, I think people experience this a ton. Because there's tons of people all over the quote thing we call church. Some of them are just absolutely hungry for the reality of who God is.
Oh, for sure.
Okay?
And get tastes of it there.
Yeah. And kind of get just enough to go, okay, this is cool, and then get frustrated by all the people who are managing the principles of that,
yeah,
as opposed to experiencing the fresh life of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, when you start falling in line with what other people want you to do instead of learning to listen to God, that's where the freezing over starts to happen, and suddenly the river doesn't flow so freely and gets all choked up again.
The way your wife makes cookies, I know this people has are a point. Be so this has angry. A point.
I get it, but it needs all the
milk,
points
though.
You want.
It needs milk.
In the cookies?
We're suffering because we do not have cold milk right here, all right?
I don't do milk, but okay.
Okay. Your wife could put a recipe down because I think we've got that recipe.
She gives it out all the time, yeah.
Okay. That's not the same thing as eating a cookie.
For sure.
It just isn't. The recipe is really neat. I could look at the recipe. We could study the recipe. We go, oh, look at the uniqueness of this recipe, and here's what it means in Greek. I mean, but the reality is it's not the same thing as eating a cookie. Here's what I do realize now that I'm out of ministry. I don't need to know the recipe. I can enjoy the cookie. I don't have to have the recipe to enjoy the relationship. And I think that's a massive shift in the fact that I used to never let God do stuff because when God would do stuff, I didn't understand it. It wasn't what I had known. And I remember a conversation I had with my college pastor way back when. Wow, that was a way back when.
You had a college pastor?
Yeah, hello.
I thought you were one.
I was talking to myself.
You were your only student.
I was myself. I got myself saved. It was awesome. Baptized myself under the shower.
And started your own
fellowship. Yeah, at least it's
all
mine.
All good.
So, but in that, I remember I was peppering him with a whole bunch of questions of something I didn't get. And I saw someone else do something, and I didn't get it, and I didn't understand it. So they obviously had to be wrong. Okay? So I'm asking all these questions, and he finally looks at me and says, Why would you purposely limit God to doing only what you understand in your life? And I went, never thought of it like that. I mean, I didn't say that out loud because that would make me feel stupid in the moment. I was hiding that. But I realized, gosh, so much of this is that fear response. I don't know what to do with what I can't control. I don't think most people really think, oh, I'm controlling, and that's really what my issue is. I've never heard someone say that.
I've never seen a controlling person think
that. Acknowledge that, yeah.
Oh, they can tell you everybody else is controlling.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But in the midst of that, it's like the only thing that really relaxes that is when you really have come to the joy and the freedom of knowing, you know, the really great news about being unable to is it's not my job. I don't have to. I can still be okay. I don't know how to make these cookies. I'm sure we've tried. I've never made one like this. But I can come to your house and enjoy them. I like that.
My 4-year-old granddaughter helped make these cookies. That's one of the great things about the recipe. Yeah, the recipe is the recipe, but there's texture and timing, and you have to just, it's not something you would teach in a classroom. It's something you have to stand
next to live and do
on a little stool and make your cookies.
Yeah.
Then call from grandpa to add the chocolate chips because that's my job.
That's your job?
That is my job.
Very good. You add the chocolate chips to life.
Got a great email here that I thought would kind of provoke some discussion from a little bit of my time in New Zealand. I thought was interesting.
Okay.
Arla writes this, and this is from an old podcast. I don't even remember where this came up. But he said, do you remember talking about men thinking, I sure wish my wife would vacuum, wash dishes, whatever, and how maybe that's God nudging them to do that little thing for their wives instead?
No, most guys have never thought that.
We have talked about it, though.
Sorry.
He said, I'm thinking that's what's been happening this week at our house. Jesus has been looking a lot like my husband and my boys. The latest happened last night. Tim, my husband, was on the phone when I noticed I should vacuum, but would wait until he got off the phone. He had barely hung up when he asked if he could vacuum. Okay. There have been other things that I have noticed, but if I were to mention any more, his man card would have to be revoked.
Uh-oh.
As of now, he's still hanging on to it. But seriously, I was blown away. I have wondered about the other things this week, and then with a smile on his face, he confessed to them under his breath last night. And he did these things as good as, if not better than, I would have done them, which is equally as stunning as all things considered. There's more, but I'll leave it at this. In a house full of guys, and after a couple of really uninspiring and difficult weeks, this is so refreshing. And not just because the men in my life are amazing, but because I saw Jesus in them.
Cool.
That's pretty amazing. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, if I understood it correctly.
If I read it correctly, that'd be the other question.
Well, sure. That was a great cookie, by the way.
They're all gone. Sorry, folks. We're done.
The reality is I think a lot of times out of our fear, we don't wait on God to do things that God would do.
Yeah.
Out of our own impulse and our own, we end up botching things that we have to be done.
Yeah.
And yet you miss out on the love of someone else going, oh, can I do that?
And I think mostly why it's shocking, because the husband rarely does. I mean, we have this thing about...
Yeah, so the analogy does fall apart there.
Men get points for vacuuming. Women get griped if they don't. It's not a fair world.
Does God get points for loving?
In fact, there was... I hope so. I don't think from everybody. No. This was in Time Magazine last week. Women, money, and power.
It's pink.
Let's talk about how the finances have shifted in many homes and the woman is kind of the chief breadwinner and how that's affected society. But there's a little point in this article I thought was fascinating. It says, money isn't everything, but when it comes to how society is organized, it's a lot. Until the mid-19th century, women's property, their very identity, was subsumed into that of their husband, a tradition so important that in 1868, when England was considering giving property rights to married women, the London Times warned that such a move would destroy marriage as society knows it, which consists of authority on the one side and subordination on the other. Were a wife to become financially empowered, the paper editorialized, she would be practically emancipated from control of her husband. What's to prevent her from going where she likes and doing what she pleases, the editorial asked. Well, plenty, actually. Even after property laws changed, women's dependence was ensured for another century by factors including gender segregation in the workplace, a lower wage scale for women, restraints on the employment of married women, and obstacles to advancement in jobs, all seen as necessary to ensure men's breadwinning ability and guarantee that women should remain loyal helpmeets. Feminists like Simone de Beauvoir saw economic independence as central to women's liberation and even humanity, arguing that for centuries, millennia even, men had used economic power to purchase women's domestic services and ensure their sexual fidelity. De Beauvoir called this the deal and argued that women were poor in every sense for accepting it. I mean, look over the course of human history.
Prostitution has been the age-old tradition.
Well, most people called it marriage, but okay. Is that what you put?
Well, that kind of put it in that context.
I read that email, which I think is lovely. I think it's lovely when men really come alongside their wives and serve and love in ways that are amazing. And wives feel incredibly liberated. Sarah and I are having some fresh discussions about this in our own life, knowing the difference between what I say to her and sometimes what communicates to her. Still, at 37 years of practice.
What do you mean still? You'll be doing that in 50 years.
Yeah, we probably will. I keep hoping it's over. I keep hoping we have the last one of those discussions.
Okay.
I'm an optimist. What can
there
I
you
say?
Go.
But it's interesting. There was a number of folks in New Zealand on this trip. I met more spiritually passionate men than I met spiritually passionate women.
Hmm.
And usually it's often the other way around. A lot more women are kind of hungry for these things, and the guys are kind of dragging tail. In this case, it was the other way around. And with one of those kind of, there was a group of guys, and they wanted to talk to me about something. So with the lunch, and it was funny because they couldn't quite get the question. They're going, let me think. That's not going to work. How can I get my, no, that's not. And he's going to look at me going, I go, keep trying, because the question you end up asking will be quite telling. And what their struggle was, what finally came out was, how do I get my wife on my spiritual journey? They feel like wonderful things have happened in their lives. They've become really, really engaged. And their wives are still responding to the old religious thing that kind of all left. And some of the wives left first. They got really sick of the whole religion trap. They watched their guys go on a bit of this journey. Some of them expressed even jealousy as to, how come you have this kind of sharing with the men that you don't even have with me at home? And have expressed that hunger. So they're kind of, how do we get our wives on our journey? And I thought, is that the goal? What? I said, wouldn't the goal be, how do you get on her journey? How do you join her where she is? Not how do I get her where I am? And they're all like going,
oh,
never.
Should I never thought of that? Yeah, never thought of that.
Never crossed our mind. I've learned this from Sarah. I just wouldn't cross my mind either. If I didn't have such a brilliant wife who kind of helps me keep learning that there's two journeys here. There's mine and there's hers. And how do we champion each other's journey? How is she the biggest cheerleader on mine? I'm the biggest cheerleader on hers, rather than I'm the man, you need to get on my journey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember sitting in a Saturday morning leadership group, and Kelly and I were sort of like the youngest couple of the group, and it was about vision, purpose, and destiny.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, it's powerful stuff.
Vision, purpose, and VPD.
Yeah, it sounds like a disease.
It might well be.
Okay.
So BPD.
There they are talking about this, and most of the guys are talking about dreams and, you know, stuff that none of it's fulfilled. They're all kind of, you know, pining and waning and whining and
waning, whining. Yeah, you put those together. That's not right.
Sorry.
You can't do that.
Whatever.
Waning and whining.
Well, I didn't mean it personally.
Hope Sarah doesn't listen to this podcast. I'm going to hear that again.
But what was so crazy is at the first coffee break, oh man, if you had just listened to some of the women, they were, I shouldn't say it, they were angry.
I got myself.
Woo-hoo.
I saw that pee
for me. I get points for that.
Women were angry.
See, I've grown up. They were angry. And it was just like this, I have put my life on hold to follow your little. And I just, that came out right after the coffee break. And I went, oh, this is epidemic. This is not just the off, you know, the one-off couple that's struggling. It's sort of like epidemic that period of time, they grew up with the more patriarchal expression of the man's in charge and the woman comes alongside and she's subordinated to the more important thing that he's leading, and that's spirituality. And you're just going like, golly, Jesus said, you know, we're to love our wife like we would our own body. And we're like, well, you don't have to teach me to love my body.
No.
I just ate two cookies.
Came pretty naturally.
It was not hard.
Austin's got it going on at one.
You didn't have to say those were for me.
The cookies, I see.
I think, you know, how do you help your wife in that journey? It's like, well, just love her. Love her. Let her be the focus and the end of your passions. And that will do something extraordinary that trying to pull her some direction is never going to accomplish.
Yeah, and I asked them, how much of your journey right now is threatening to your wife? How much of the relationship you guys share together, and how much you talk about it, and how much you want your wife to talk about it, and when she doesn't talk about it, it shuts down. How much of this appears threatening to your wife, and they're all going,
all of it.
Yeah, probably all of it. And I said, the last thing you want to have happen when you're on the journey of trying to live the life of Jesus, when you're on that, the last thing you want that journey to do is threaten the people closest to you. If God makes you a better lover, if God makes you more aware, more self under control, I don't know where that word was going to go, but less selfish, less so focused on me and what I'm getting. Yeah, self-absorbed is a good word. And now suddenly I'm in my wife's world. I'm not asking her to get in my world. Because one of the wives, especially, had asked her husband, would you take this class with me to kind of help do this? And he's saying, no, I went to the first class and it just was so stupid. The whole thing was just stupid, stupid, stupid. Okay, how did this help your marriage? I'm just kind of curious.
Translation in the wife's ears. You're stupid, stupid, stupid.
I'm telling you. And it's amazing. These guys are going, oh, see, we thought we were on the important journey we need to get our wives on. I'm going, your wives may well join you on this journey. Because I was with them in other meetings and we had some interesting conversations with them. But I said, right now, this thing just says to me, this is the most important thing in my life. And guess what? You're not. And the things you're interested in, guess what? They're not.
Wow.
And I'm trying to get you here. And so whenever you start to bring up the stuff in the group, they just shut down. They're going, they all shut down. I said, well, of course they're shutting down. Why wouldn't they?
Right.
Because you crawl up on your little rock and say, get up on the rock with me. And they're going, dude, I'm not even sure I want to get on that rock with you. And isn't the joy of being married, the joy of relationship, the joy of life, the message of the incarnation is crawl down in someone else's world. Live where they're living and watch what God does. Care about the things they care about. Love what they love and you'll find a way to be on a journey together. But if you've got the best journey and we're not going to have a relationship to you, you know, I'm not going to know how to love you until you share this part of it with me.
No.
It's not going to work so well.
It doesn't translate so good.
Yeah.
You look at the life of Jesus, and if you ever thought of, gosh, someone here on a mission to redeem all of mankind, that's not unimportant.
You wouldn't think.
You wouldn't think. Oh, that might make a top 10 list.
It might be right there with chocolate and cookies.
Absolutely. But do you ever get the impression that when you're reading through the red letter stories, Jesus didn't seem to be in this driven, urgent, I must, anxiety of, I've got this journey and I got this purpose, I gotta do it.
Nor was he talking to people with, you got to have vision, purpose, destiny. He wasn't talking
to he wasn't given the VPD disease.
No. He wasn't a carrier.
I think that's a spiritually transmitted disease.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Or
religiously transmitted disease.
Yes.
Maybe better said.
You know what? But I do find that rather striking, going like, gosh, if anyone would have felt like the weight of the world was on their shoulders, wink, wink. I mean, it kind of was.
It was.
But he doesn't live life. He had time for people. My biggest problem being in church, we're so busy doing all these important things. Get out of my way.
Yes.
And it's only when the meeting's over that the fellowship really begins. And you're just like, well, what's wrong with that? That's what everyone's loving.
Yeah.
Quickest way to have a great meeting is start it and end it and watch what happens.
Yeah, we got an interesting discussion in New Zealand about why do we call it the opening prayer? It should be the closing prayer because we're actually stopping fellowship. And at the end of the service, we have the opening prayer so that people get back to fellowship. I thought, that's hilarious. Oh, gosh, I thought that was
fun. But they were even at a meeting, see?
Yeah.
I do. I think it's so difficult to just not have to put yourself in charge. I mean, even in organizing people. And it's nothing wrong with administrative gifts and starting things. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do think that it's so hard for us to allow God's life to lead.
There also needs to be an administrative gift that ends things. We seem to only start things.
True.
There'd be a real gift to say, this
is
done.
It's over.
We no longer like each other. We no longer are enjoying this. So why don't we just
say, it's over. That's a lose. That gets in the loss category if you end that way.
No, because what we do is we keep trying to hang out together until the whole thing blows up and people, you know, lie about it.
I don't disagree, but that's why they don't say, oh, I just feel led, you know.
If you don't end it when it's still good, then you end it when it starts on the downward trend, or you end it when it's completely blown up and nothing is left of it.
Yeah, I got those friends that feel like led.
Yeah. But Jesus, back to this little 21-year-old's comment in the car, this is more simple than we dare to believe. Jesus was just simply introducing people to a life with his Father. He was doing it in the context they were in. If it's Martha in the kitchen, if it's a woman getting water by a well, he wasn't around saying, join my club, man, I've got a vision, purpose, destiny for your life, and you got to go on a mission, and you got to do. He didn't talk in that way with people. He was able to kind of begin where they are and love them for who they were, and really serve.
You just said it right there. I think people felt loved. I think they felt celebrated in the who they were. He can hang out with all the wrong crowd. The religious zealots of the day are going like, wait a minute, you're hanging out with the wrong people. And he's going like, I'm hanging out with folks I love. And I don't think it was, hey, I don't love you. But they're busy trying to do something. He's busy trying to be with people.
Well, he hung out with them, too. It just never seemed to go real well.
They seemed to get in little – they were doing what most of us know as church.
Yeah, I had a couple of those conversations when I was in New Zealand, too. And it's like, oh, my gosh. Religions laced with all that religious hocus pocus, smokum dokum, and how do we control this and do all that. It's just exhausting. When you get into a live conversation where you walk away from it going, man, that was so cool, versus one where you're going, okay, I think I wasted a couple hours right there, sadly enough. But there you go.
See, they're only wasted if you stop valuing what's in front of you.
Yeah, well, I did stop valuing somebody. Okay, confession time. Not the people.
No.
But the conversation that was in front of me.
But do you know what I'm saying?
This conversation isn't helpful. No, I get exactly what you're saying.
See, because I mean, I can ding myself with that reality. It's when we stop valuing the thing in front of us that it really does become a waste. I mean, I look at you know, teenagers. Well, I'm bored. It's like, well, that's your problem. That's not the world's problem. Not my problem. I am not here to entertain you. You know, your being bored is your loss of being fascinated with what is around you. That's an internal issue.
You don't just need more entertainment, a new game, newer game.
No.
Football season start up again.
No.
Boredom is just...
It's placing value. I mean, if all of a sudden you valued the things that were around you, that's what the gift of perspective does. When all of a sudden it's like, you know what? Nothing's changed, but all of a sudden it's all changed.
Yeah.
That's because all of a sudden you got different eyes and you're looking at it like, oh... I didn't perceive that was already there. I kind of feel like God's there all the time, but I don't have the perspective so as to value the truth of that. Because if I did, I would have had a different experience.
Yeah.
I really would have.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, exactly, if he's causing your heart to beat and he's giving you each breath that you have, I mean, those got addresses in Scripture. How's he not with you? But I'll dare say I'm not sure that that's what you're thinking right now.
If you're bored. I'm thinking about it. Is that a personal attack?
No.
I wasn't even thinking about cookies, I am.
I just think that with that whole, how do you keep it simple? You've got to keep him present. And it's not keeping him present. It's acknowledging that he's there. That I can. If I know he's there, I can relax.
And to do that, you have to be present in the moment as well. We've talked about that before. Most people are still dealing with pain in their past or fearing something coming in the future and not really in the moment. But when you're present in the moment and you acknowledge God's presence in the moment and you cherish what's in front of you, I mean, that's one of the big things that God woke me up to years ago in my own life, and I still work on this with Sarah, is that I didn't promise just to stay faithful to her. I did promise that when we got married. I promised to cherish her all the days of her life. I wrote my own vows, so I know what I promised her. What does it mean that I convey that to her? And when you read these, you know, that's what I read in Time Magazine, you realize this only 50 years ago, it began to change for women, that women were to be valued as precious gifts and partners in the process, not as subservient, subordinate. That's only 50 years ago in human history. That's just so tiny.
That is a bit wild.
And trying to find that. I know I get in this discussion a lot on the road with women and situations. Women feel so oppressed by religion. And the freedom that came to women in our culture didn't come through the church. It didn't come through brothers and sisters, brothers saying, you know what, we need to see women the way Jesus saw women. It didn't come that way. It came through the world, and it came through a feminist movement that most of us despise, but the effects of it have been wonderful, I think. And we need to more and more. Men need to speak up for women, and men need to help, like this Arla was talking about in her home.
Vacuum more.
Yeah, do some vacuuming, wash some dishes, hang out.
You know, what's strange, though, is for religion to be the thing that so oppresses women. Why is it that they're the ones who tend to be leading the vanguard of spiritual passion more often than not? That's a conundrum.
It may be. It may be true, too, that that's the place where they could in some – I mean, that's the place where they could be more of that.
There's whole denominations that would say not.
Yeah. Definitely that's true. But there's other ones that said, yeah, do that. Do, serve, work here, do all that stuff. And
come on, Martha, shift gears.
And we've had that talk before about, you know, how that environment, because it's basically subservient to somebody else that's leading the thing. The women find their identity in that whole thing again. I think it is more effeminizing than that's why men don't find it too engaging. But I do find men find this part of the journey engaging. How do we live loved? How do we live in the life of Jesus? And now these guys are on a fresh passion to how do I go back and show my wife, not as an act and a pretense, because if you do any of this, you vacuum for 2 weeks and you never do it again.
If it's a tool and not an end in itself, people see right through it.
Yeah. It's like I'm not giving you any time, but I'll bring you flowers once a week so you'll think I love you. That just doesn't work.
I think the fruit of... If you're really on a journey that is centered on unfolding and steeping in the revelation of I'm living loved, it does make you a better lover of people, not an agenda-driven journeyer.
A VPD guy.
Yeah.
No, I think that's true.
And I think when all of a sudden how do you start valuing everything around you? Well, it's not on the hill over there. It's not on the fence just beyond here. If I could only get there, it's... You know, when you start to love the things around you, they get transformed into the beauty that they are.
Yeah.
And I think
cherish and value and, admire. That live in that space and treat people like that around you. And I think you do get lots of opportunities to expend life. Me too.
Yeah.
Every day.
More cookies, please.
Sarah.
Thank you. for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,